Netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney. You're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
Thanks for listening to this week's FX Podcast. I'm John Montgomery. Before we get into this week's interview, I want to mention that we'll be taking part in an event in Los Angeles on March 2nd. It's with the Foundry. They're developers of great plugins and an incredible Furnace suite of tools. We're going to be covering a lot of the inside details about the technology underneath the tools so that you know how to use the tools better, as well as sharing some of our tips and tricks about using them. We've set up the program so that you can drop by any time during the day and stay as long as you like. We'll be doing a kind of rotation thing with what we're covering. So if you're stuck at work, why don't you just go ahead and fire off a super high sampled render to buy you some time to drop on by and head on over to RFX where we're holding the event. Check out the Furnace Live with FX Guide story on our homepage. It's got details about the event as well as a link to the registration page. In this week's podcast, we continue our look at matte painting as Mike Seymour's talks with Wayne Hogg. Wayne got his start in professional matte painting on the Fifth Element back in the mid-90s, and he's worked on numerous projects since then, including the TV series Farscape, as well as creating some really beautiful imagery for the Lord of the Rings movies as a senior matte painter at WIDA. So, let's dive into the art of matte painting and join Mike Seymour in Sydney. Mike?
Thanks again, John. So, Wayne, thanks for joining us.
Hi.
So, I wanted to talk to you about matte painting, obviously, as part of this series that we're doing. Could you give us some perspective on how you came to matte painting? What was your sort of background that led to you working as a professional matte painter?
Sure. Well, my background has always been photography. I came into matte painting through photography. Even before photography, I worked as a qualified electronic technician, industrial electronic technician, back in Melbourne. And the department I worked in, we had a large dark room, and we were quite involved in using photography for our work. I'd always been interested in photography anyway at an amateur level. I got out of that and went back to school, and I completed my Bachelor of Arts in Photography at RMIT. My third year folio consisted of compositing photography, photographic elements like people, environments, scenes, whatever, into created backgrounds, created environments. So I was always pretty interested in matte painting, or at least the idea of creating other environments that you couldn't get any other way.
It's interesting. It's interesting that you refer to them as environments, because there seems to have been initially, you know, there was the idea of the establishing shot, and that was, you know, a 2D matte painting traditionally, and that's moved now to being the idea of, you know, the matte painter as sort of digital environment artist. You sort of create an environment rather than creating a single painting these days. Would that be a fair description?
Is now, certainly with the advent of 3D, but in my mind it has always been, and certainly when I was creating that folio of work, I saw it as an environment that I'd photographed people as characters and so on that were going to inhabit this environment. So I thought of it as an environment and as a place. Cutting a long story short, I took that completed folio to SIGGRAPH in LA in 1995, and I hocked that around to a whole bunch of different companies there, and I got lucky with Digital Domain.
Yeah, and that work for Digital Domain that you did, which was with Luc Besson on Fifth Element?
Yes, that's right.
So I think I'm right in saying that, I mean, that the shots were gorgeous, and if I recall correctly, almost every shot you did made the trailer.
Yeah, that's right. A funny little story since then, if one of the latest editions of Cinefex, Karen Galikas, who was our CG supervisor at the time, she has since stated that looking back on that, she said the matte painting sucked, that they look really bad, and I have to agree with her. there's a lot of things in there that I would change, given a chance again, but anyway, you know, life moves on, but I thought it was quite funny.
So let's discuss how you'd approach a big shot, like because I had some epic shots in Fifth Element. Do you prefer an open brief, or do you prefer quite a specific direction from the director when you've got to produce a big, epic, establishing shot, like a wide shot?
It depends. It depends on the subject matter and what I might be personally interested in. If I'm personally interested in something, then I prefer an open brief. And if it's something I don't have a lot of familiarity with, then more direction is good. So it really depends. In the case of that Fifth Element matte painting, we had a sketch by Paul Mézière, French graphic novelist, and he had drawn this wide establishing shot for the Fifth Element several years before the production. So I had a lot to go on. However, having said that, I ended up sitting down with a production designer at one point, and perhaps it's a French thing or a European way of working, but they were kind of happy to just let me paint whatever I wanted. The broad strokes were there in the sketch, and that's all they cared about. So I had a pretty free hand in that by the end of it.
You've also done some interesting work in sort of mocking up stuff in 3D just to get camera angles and stuff, and then taking that 3D and not using it as 3D per se, but more as leading into the work that you do. Is that something you like to do?
Oh, gee, I haven't done anything like that for a long time. It depends on the shot again. Because I have a very strong photography background, I tend to photograph a lot of my stuff first. I know what I'm looking for, and therefore I can shoot pretty close to what I'm after and work from that. But, yeah, I have done the whole 3D thing.
Because, I mean, one of the problems, I guess, in doing this kind of work is that, you know, it's in somebody's head, or at least, you know, it's something that needs to be discussed and approved. And there is an iterative process there. So is there anything that you do to walk through that process to quickly sort of narrow down the direction? Or is it really just, you know, as it comes?
I try and... The client or director, whoever it might be... As far as I'm concerned, they either give you you get it from them pretty quickly, or you don't. And if you don't, it's because they don't know what it is. And that's when I start asking a lot of questions to try and, you know, chip away the marble and find out what they're really thinking. Because they sort of know, but they don't know. And it's, you know, it might be a phrase or a word or one reference photo that they forgot to show you. And that kind of sums it up. And you go, aha, now I know what you're after. Other people are really specific about what it is they want, and they know it exactly. So it depends on the client, what they're after.
I guess if there was a trademark to your work, it has to be the way light plays in the scene. And I mean, it's the thing that most people know you for, just really beautiful handling of light. Do you think that's directly linked to the photography, or is that more just an eye?
Yeah, totally. No, totally. It's all from the photography. But I guess, then again, I've met photographers who don't have an eye for light at all. So it's something I've always been interested in.
I mean, there's a temptation to try and, you know, play everything in terms of very dramatic lighting, I guess because, you know, it's the concept that you can produce anything and it's not like you have to build it. But there's a lot of subtlety as well, isn't there?
Awful lot of subtlety, even in... I finished a shot recently for Ellura. It's just a country road scene with hills sort of in the distance, some trees around it, and it was pretty much, based on the live action, it was pretty much midday. And that's one of the hardest things to paint is midday, because there's nothing dramatic about it at all. And it's about bending the rules sometimes a little, you know, saying, all right, well, let's just add a little bit of side light, because who knows, it's midday, but there might be clouds directly above us, therefore there's a big chunk of light coming over from the left. You know, that sort of stuff. So I can kind of, at least I try and add a bit more drama to something that really inherently doesn't have any drama.
So if you're photographing yourself, presumably you can photograph things for the right time of day and the right aspect of light, but how easy is it for you to take stuff and sort of bend it into a different time of day or a different lighting mood?
That's pretty easy, actually, and I learnt that at Digital Domain on Red Corner. There was a shot of the Forbidden City. We're looking out over the Forbidden City, presumably from a hotel room, which doesn't really exist. And it was shot daytime, and it was lit from the left-hand side. The director wanted nighttime, moonlit from the right-hand side.
Okay.
That's the biggest shift in lighting I've ever had to paint before. So that was like two vastly different lighting situations. So I had to remove the shadows, of course, from the daylight side and then throw light into the moonlight from the opposite side. Then because it was nighttime, there was a lot of internal illumination from buildings and so on, so I had to add that in as well. But that was great. I loved it.
How much is that sort of work taking elements that you yourself may have photographed and sort of photoshopping them together versus how much is it taking the base elements and then sort of painting over the top of those?
In that particular instance, it was basically using all of the base elements and just doing a whole level of regrading in a bunch of different layers, you know, and went from there.
I think if I remember you telling me once before that the more you went on, the less tools you basically used. It isn't a matter for you of using everything in Photoshop. It's just using a relatively small set of things and then focusing on the actual work itself. Is that...
Yeah, that's true. I guess when you first start using some of these tools, whether it be 3D or Photoshop, you know, you start off and you think you don't know any of it. So you don't know any of the tools, and then you progressively, you know, play with every single one of them and you use all the filters and all that kind of stuff. And progressively you realize that you don't need too much at all. And so the curve rises and then it stops and then it drops back down again, you know, just a handful of things that you'll use on a day-to-day basis to the point where you're not even thinking about the tool anymore.
So for a bunch of that work that you've done, like Fifth Element and the work you did on Lord of the Rings, it had a very, you know, realistic look, even though, of course, it was sort of fantasy material. Mm-hmm. I wanted to swing you around to concept...
Some will dispute that, by the way.
I'm sorry?
Some will dispute that.
Okay. But I want to swing you around to concept art, or rather a looser form of work. Do you feel that concept art is a natural continuum into matte painting, or are they two very separate disciplines done by very separate types of people?
Hard to say. I've done both. Most of the matte painters I've worked with have also done both and are usually fairly adept at doing both. So I don't necessarily think it's two different types of people. I think it's just... It's a different job, it's a different mindset. You've got to shift your thinking a little bit, but I don't think it's that difficult, and I don't think it's that different from matte painting. Certainly if you're also going to be the matte painter responsible for that job that you're designing in the first place.
It can be quite effective to do kind of mood frames and lighting concept exploration work, can't it? Even if it's not deliberately for a shot.
The beauty of concept work is you can be loose as you like, and you're just getting across a basic point, and no one cares how loose it is. And you can throw it away. With matte painting work, people tend to get a bit too obsessed with details.
Yeah, there can be a certain amount of micromanagement on matte paintings, can't there?
Yeah, well, in all visual effects, I think.
And tell me, you've also, in addition to the photography work, done some traditional oil painting work, is that correct?
Yes.
And so that, I guess, has a direct lineage back to the Albert Whitlocks and the, I don't know, Peter Enshaws and people. Do you find that you have a new appreciation for those traditional matte painters, or is your oil painting work very different?
Well, it's I guess, slightly different. I incorporate people into my paintings. It's a chance to tell the whole story as opposed to filling in a blank hole that someone else has created. So it's very different from a creative point of view for me. It's not about matte painting, but having the skills that I do have, no doubt it's coming through in the oil painting anyway. But I mean, if you've ever seen a real oil painting, I remember standing in the foyer of ILM a few years ago and seeing some of the original Return of the Jedi matte paintings hanging on the wall, and they're just mashed potato. They're loose. They're so free. There's not a straight, hard edge in any of it.
Yeah, I remember seeing a close-up of the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, the scene where they have the box put in the... And it is very loose. And yet, something about that natural media really gave it a level of detail that I think... it's almost like that seemed more real than the heavily photoshopped, super fine detail composition stuff.
Yeah, that's a struggle we had on Lord of the Rings constantly. It was how much detail that the director wanted and what we knew we didn't need to put in there, because the whole idea of a matte painting is not, it's not a poster. It's not there to be viewed, you know, all day long on a wall. It's there for a very finite amount of time, and it's a basic story across. Some of the stuff we actually made it into Lord of the Rings as matte paintings is incredibly loose and almost scribble-like, and it's pretty amazing. We'd throw up a shot for dailies or whatever it was, and we'd get it filmed out, and we'd look at it, and I'd be looking for certain things that I knew weren't finished yet, and yet I'd see them on the screen, and they worked beautifully, and I realized that, wow, I don't have to go any further with that.
Yeah, I think it's almost possible to fuss with something to death.
But the problem was, as soon as they get down to, say, the compositing department, they'd look at it on the monitor, and they'd loop it 300 times, and all of a sudden they'd start to pick out the squiggly bits and the bit that wasn't quite right or that rough patch over there, and all of a sudden you'd be working it to death, to death, to death, and then all of a sudden people would be saying, why doesn't it look real?
Yeah, it's very hard to fight that instinct to have vast amounts of detail when, in fact, that's got nothing to do with the storytelling.
I mean, my philosophy is loop it 5 times. If you see something in those 5 loops, fine, fix it. But if you don't, leave it. Move on. Because it's going to cost everybody in the long run. The more you loop it, the more work you do to it. So,
when you're doing feature film work, what kind of resolution do you like to work at? Somebody's told me just double is a good rule of thumb.
Depends. We, on Fifth Element, the big wide shot of New York City in the spaceport, I did that at 4K. Halfway through that process, we filmed it out at 2K, and Mark Stetson had asked me, he said, did you film out the 4K or the 2K? And I said, no, that's the 2. And he said, well, that's way too sharp. So from that point forward, I continued with the 4K, but we dropped it down to 2 and then blur it. It was just too sharp.
Yeah, it must be difficult when, especially if people are judging matte paintings in isolation, when, you know, the attention may need to be drawn to the foreground for the story, and analysing it in isolation isn't really the right way to do it, is it?
No, I prefer to have shots, you know, incorporated into the sequence or a short part of the scene if possible, so you get a few shots beforehand and a few afterwards, and you get a sense of the flow of it, because it's not, the composition of a still image is not quite the same as the composition needed for a matte painting. It's the stuff that's coming before and after that have bearing on that.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point, actually. The role of, in cinema in particular, because it's a very large projected format, the composition of the shot has, I guess, two rules. It's the composition, not rules is perhaps the wrong word, but it's the composition of the picture itself in isolation, but also how it relates to the shots cutting either side and where your eyes are going in and coming out of the shot.
Correct.
Do you often get the...
The same applies for TV work as well. It's a kind of an opposite compositional effect. How many times I've heard clients say, oh, we want a cinematic look, and yet they've barely given the shot, say, you know, 2 seconds, and the composition that they're after or that they would like doesn't quite look cinematic at all. And the other thing is it's viewed across a room on a very small box. I mean, that's changing, of course, with bigger screens and so on, but it's not quite your cinema experience. So compositional rules for cinema don't quite work for TV, unfortunately.
What sort of, we'd like to ask what sort of work you've been doing recently?
Bit of freelance work, just, you know, TV commercial work, the odd bit of film work for some guys in Allura, just TV film, I think, and a couple of book covers.
Publishing. How have you found working for print output as opposed to projected output?
The fundamental difference between working for publishing and working for film is that the publishing company gives the artist a fair amount of respect up front without you having to demonstrate it. The fundamental difference is because they're representing artists in the first place, which is their writers. And so I've found it really quite refreshing to be given all sorts of freedom and the ability to make all sorts of suggestions on book covers that you wouldn't get in the film industry. And that's just a fundamental difference in the characters of the industries, I guess.
Yeah, I guess there's a much more immediate relationship between you and the publisher. In a large feature project, you're talking about a crew of 500 or 1,000 people, and even though you were or are, of course, a very senior matte painter, it still must be contact hours with directors and stuff in those circumstances that can be quite limited.
Oh, I saw Peter Jackson on Lord of the Rings. I was there for 1 and 2, and I saw him twice, personally at my workstation. And that was in the early days of film one, and never again after that. I mean, we'd seen in the screening room, of course, and if our shot was there, he'd talk to us. But, yeah, the contact was pretty minor. That's for sure.
So moving forward for your own work right now, leaving aside commercial stuff, is it what gives you the most satisfaction? Is it painting, photography, or the traditional painting?
Oh, geez, it's all of them. I'm branching into writing as well. I love photojournalism. I spent time last year traveling to China and India, and specifically China, to document the Yangtze River and the damming of the Three Gorges Dam over the Yangtze River, and some of the effects that has had. I find that fascinating. The real world to me is a lot more fascinating than the film industry in many ways. Well, I think we could take a leaf out of what's going on in the real world and bring some of that back to film.
Yeah, there is a real world out there, and as fun as visual effects are, they don't necessarily have the same impact on people's lives.
No, not at all.
Well, thanks, Wayne, for taking time to talk to us. And look, it's really interesting listening to the views of a senior matte painter, both in terms of what you've done in your career thus far, and also just some of the interesting areas that you're moving into the future. We really appreciate your time.
Yeah, you're welcome. That's fun.
Thanks, Mike, and thanks, Wayne, for taking the time to share your insights in the art with us. We've posted some of Wayne's work online in our feature story, along with some samples of his photography as well. I think you'll really like that, so be sure to check that out. Well, that's it for this week. For Mike Seymour and Jeff Huser, I'm John Montgomery. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this week's FX Podcast. Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by using the Contact Us links at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright 2006 FX Guide LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide LLC.